Hello and welcome to your Sports Memo podcast. My name is Calvin Emekonwuka and it's my privilege to have you join us on this podcast from wherever you are and whatever podcast platform you're listening to. It's really my privilege to have you join us, and I thank you so very much for being a part of this show. Today, I we're going to discuss the influence of finance in football, in the rise of the super teams, and how they've affected leagues across the top five European open leagues. I there's a tweet by one of the people in the pod here that has led me to thinking I think we need to have people to come and discuss, and let me hear different different views if it's possible from them. I've got in I think they're all in Lagos, DJ Faremi, Kea Guru, and Shola Ayepeku in the pod with me. DJ is probably the first timer, the rest are all regulars here. Gentlemen, thank you for taking out your time to come on this episode of your Sports Memo podcast.
My pleasure. Good afternoon, everybody.
Thank you, Shola.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me, Emeka. It's great to be here. First timer, so treat me nice.
I will. It's because of you.
I'll treat you nice again.
It's because of you we're even having this. Just so you know, Oke is a fellow Madrista. So both of you are from the quote-unquote super teams.
That's a pleasant surprise.
So everyone has to watch it out.
I typically never meet fellow Madridistas.
Hi, Oke. Good to meet you as well.
Right.
Hi.
So
to everyone, welcome. My name is Oke Agboro, and I'm glad to be here again.
Eji, can you tell me why... I'm going to start this from here. Why did you start following football?
That's an interesting one.
Before you start, let me explain. One of the things that I found attractive to football as I was growing up, and as I wrote in my book, it seemed such a simple sport. It seemed it was easy to know the winner. Every league table is simple. The team with the highest number of points wins the league. The team with the more goals wins the football match. So there's no story. There's no going around about in finding the winner. So the simplicity of it is one of the reasons I believe that got me involved, and the competition. Especially competition. As I grew older, and I'm talking about from 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, I realized that the competition was what I liked. You didn't need to be extra special to be involved in the sport. And there's a book here, I think it was in London, somebody wrote it, was called Sandals for Gold Post. It didn't take long to find something to use for goalpost to start to have a game of football going. So yeah, why did you start loving the sport?
I mean, I'll just be really honest. Obviously, growing up in Nigeria, football was the most popular, so that made sense. I think also as well, like, you know, compared to some other sports, I think football is a lot more passionate. And I say this as someone who's like, you know, very sports centric. I watch a lot of sports. And, you know, just to digress a bit, I've had conversations with people about how over the years I've enjoyed watching tennis and basketball more than football, for instance. That's a different conversation entirely. I have a good reason for that.
Exactly. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, because they are all action sports. So every second in tennis, for instance, there's something to catch your attention. It's a bit different in football where there's build-up, there is, you know, all of that. I think football climaxes more than any other sports. You know, when you score a goal, those emotions are absolutely different. But, you know, just digressing a bit. So, yes, I think the passion that comes with football, for me, obviously caught me as well. I'd say those are the things that, you know, sort of attracted me to football. But over the years as well, I think from a more technical point of view, I like the fact that there's a lot more skill involved in football. There's a lot more unpredictability in football. I think the one thing that football gives you that not many other sports give you is the human angle to it. I totally agree with what you said earlier about how simple it is in football compared to some other sports. We've seen some footballers that are just like very raw, very untapped, and then they do amazing things. Like literally, you just have to put the ball in the net.
Yes.
It's so much difficult bouncing a ball. I tried to play basketball growing up, broke my finger. You know, and these days I try to play tennis, I can't hack it. But then with football, I can just strike the ball literally, and it goes in. So I think, yeah, from a more technical aspect, that's something that's more fascinating about football compared to some other sports.
What drew you, very quickly, I'm just trying to lay a background for this whole discussion. What drew you to football?
Like I said, it's just like growing up in Nigeria, really.
This is Shola. I'm asking Shola.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think the line went up for a bit there, so yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So hello again, everybody. I think like every Nigerian, just like you said, football. I mean, in our time, so to speak, from the 60s and 70s, virtually the only sports you were born into knowing was football. And not like now when there's so much TV coverage of many other sports.
Yeah.
Even if football is king of sports. But in those days, once you started walking, you had bought your balls as gifts to start with. And then the only sport you saw on TV was football. And I was quite lucky because I grew up in the University of Ibadan environment, and we had so many open fields and everything, facilities. So if you were not playing on the structured pitch, we were out there creating our pitches by going out to cut bamboos and cut sticks and create angle posts, use the ash, burnt ash, I mean ashes to form our lines and all that stuff. So it was just natural. And then we had a football club that was thriving about the Shooting Stars. And my dad was a club member. I mean, then Nigerian football was so organized that it's a travesty to see what's happening today. Then every home match, my dad would take me to National Stadium, to Liberty Stadium. Yeah, but before you get to Liberty, Shooting Stars had this clubhouse, massive clubhouse. I was a kid. Yeah. I can't put together dimensions now, but that clubhouse had a sports facilities for table tennis, a cafe or a diner, and had a swimming pool, and so club members would go in, and my dad would play table tennis, I would go and swim and do whatever we were doing, and then at a certain time, the Shooting Stars boss will come and pick club members, because we were packed there, their cars there, and take us down the road to Liberty, up to the VIP, the VIP place.
Yes.
And we watch the match from VIP. You know, so you can imagine all those things as an 8, 9, 10-year-old. Those things are already formed in my head long before I even started reading the shoots and all the things of this that we're all used to now.
Yeah.
And after the game, the players were obligated to come and meet us.
No.
Or we were taken down to the dressing room. Yes, it was a fantastic. We were so organized in Nigeria then. We were the Shooting Stars.
This is way back then.
That's when I met Shegu Odegba, me and Coke. Yeah.
Whoa.
And then, of course, I used to draw comics. I used to draw all the goals I watched. I was one of the few who have, my dad liked football, so we were always watching all the matches. That was match of the day or one of those things on TV then, syndicated. So every Saturday, 3 o'clock, Premier League, I mean, whatever league was called then was on.
Yeah.
And the FA Cup was a 6-hour event, remember?
Yeah,
from 12 noon.
Yes.
So from 12 noon, the broadcast started live from Wembley or wherever, and all the previews. So you had to just go up on football.
Right.
And play.
Thank you, Shola. That is quite illuminating. We would use this for another podcast, really, because this one you've just described about the players having to come and meet you, the club members, and all, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it was back then.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. So, when I got to meet all the shooting star players, including Shemo Odegbami, and that's how we, later when I became more of an adult, and I told him, he remembers that. Those kind of things that also motivate him to dream about Nigeria being great again, It was great, you know. And you bought your ticket way ahead.
Yes, I remember that bit.
If you wanted to buy tickets, it was, so why can't we do that now with all the technology and all the so-called development and advancement? And here we are. I'm tired.
This is a bit of my pet project of mine, but go ahead.
Okay, how did yours come about?
Well, mine is not much different from the guys, except that it's a bit my time is a bit later. I think a decade later than you guys, right? And I think the decline had already started. But even when I was there, I grew up in a house of boys. There were boys everywhere, and I had four brothers, I had uncles, and everybody played. Right? And I remember watching the 1980 World Cup as a kid.
82?
No, 80 World Cup, 80 Nations Cup, sorry. AFCON 80. I remember that some of my uncles wanted to go to the stadium but couldn't get tickets. So they had to come, they were coming from outside of Lagos, and they had to come to our house in Yaba because they failed to get tickets. So they ended up watching the final at home in my house. I was really young then. I remember us winning. I was celebrating. I remember watching 82 World Cup. I'm feeling very sad when Brazil lost. So I grew up in a house of football lovers, and we all wanted to play. But I didn't start playing. To be fair, I was more of a runner. I was more of an athlete.
Mm.
So I used to just run. I used to do the 200 meters and the 400 meters. So I never really played football in my elementary school days. I'm one of the rare examples of that. I started playing in secondary school, and I started playing because I went for, back in the days when we had youth fund, there was a youth fund scout that came to our school and asked the sports team to organize a tournament so he could look at the talent, and he had the one for junior boys and senior boys. And I remember I played because there was no sprinting, and they said, oh, run in, and they just told me, okay, go. And I think I started, my first position was at fullback. And at the end of the game, the guy walks over to the coach and says, pick this horse out. And he picked me out. And he says, go ahead. Which was very strange, because I was like, okay, I covered space, I put the ball a couple of times, I did it. And the guy says, oh, this guy. And then he now does this strange thing. He says, this guy should be a forward. And this was in my GS2, and this was my football game. I had always watched the game, but I never considered myself good enough to play. I mean, I used to watch my uncle and my older brother, you know, juggle the ball and everything. And I think what attracted me to football, I think after that, this is my uncles and my brothers were much more skilled than I was. I remember thinking to myself, I'm never going to be as good as that. So it was a bit surprising for me to get picked. And I think what attracted me to football is I've always thought football is a fundamentally fair sport.
Yes.
Right? In the sense that you don't need to have any unique physical capabilities. Basketball, you need to be 6'5 or something, yes, to really be great.
Yes.
To run a marathon, you either have to have been born in the mountains of Kenya and be super skinny. Football, American football, you need to be, you know, built like a tank or something to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Football, everything you need for football can be developed. stamina can be developed. Technique on the ball, you just walk on the ball. Pace, you can practice. So I'm one of those examples of somebody who was just told, oh, you have a little bit of ability, let's work on it. And by the time I was in SS3, I was playing youth front teams in the Southeast. You understand? So I think that's where my appreciation for the game is, because everything I did on the game, I developed. I was taught how to. I was one of those people that, I wasn't one of those guys that you look at in the stadium that just knew how to dribble. I was not one. I was not that guy. Yeah. I had to learn it. I wasn't one of the guys who was super skillful at change of pace. I had to learn it. Everything on football, I had to learn. And that's where my appreciation for the game is. I understand that everything can be developed.
Wow.
And it, which is very different from basketball or something, or other sports, I think. And that's where my, that's where the difference is for me.
Right, okay. You have brilliantly led me into this issue of finances in football clubs and all of that. Deji, you, about your tweet about super teams, I do think that the fundamentals of football in Europe were, fundamentals were changed completely by two very important decisions that happened in different places. The summer of 2003 that had Roman Abramovich taking over Chelsea, and with the billions that he came with, and the, what was happening in La Liga, where Real Madrid and Barcelona were gazumping the rest of the clubs in terms of the TV revenue. These two things have had truly powerful effects on football teams and football leagues, well down even to now. I say this, that by the time Jose Mourinho locked up to Southwest London, Chelsea had not won the league title in 55 years. Now, when we're talking about big teams, they mention Chelsea. Listen, every time that I kid the people not, and I kid anybody who is reading this, who is listening to this, I kid the people not. Every time I read that thing about Chelsea, a big club, I always force myself, I try not to laugh. Because
by that annoys me.
It doesn't annoy me, it makes me, I find it very funny. Because I remember when I started watching, English football, Chelsea were going between Division 1 and Division 2 and all of that. And by the time Ken Bates and Matthew Harden were able to take over, they were able to get the odd cup here and there. But challenging for the title, who sent them? So, but Abramovich changed, as we Nigerians would say, Abramovich changed everything. And I think he now, what he, the effect of what he did with Chelsea made it more attractive to other people to think, yeah, I think we can take money into football now and change things. So, do you think that this influence now, the way, take for instance, the way PSG are, the way Man City are, the way Newcastle are, do you not subscribe to the fact that without this huge injection of money from wealthy individuals and even states, that it would be possible to have built these super teams?
I think the straight answer to that is no. Like, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, try to delude myself into thinking money doesn't matter in football or in anything for that matter. Like, we all know, like, in everything in life, money matters. So let's, you know, get that out of the way first. My argument is that, and this ties back to some of the points we had made earlier about why we fell in love with football, why we like football. it's because it's fair. It's because, you know, in the end, it comes down to the human. It comes down to how much you can do, how much you can interpret, how much, you know, how you can hit the ball in the goal. Like, literally, that's what football is about.
Basically, yes.
And my argument is that football, the money that's coming to football doesn't necessarily translate at the level that people, you know, want to paint. I think that we have exaggerated the influence of money in football. Yes, money is good, but at the bottom of it, I think money can help you get, you know, what you call game changers. It'll help you get, you know, ceiling raisers. So for instance, money can help you get an 80,000 capacity stadium. But if you are in a town, a small town, or if you have a very small fan base, say for instance Manchester City, good example, they have a big stadium, they have all the money, but they're struggling to fill their stadiums. The reason why they're struggling to fill their stadium is because they have a very small fan base in Manchester, because in Manchester it's still all about United. There's some things that you just can't buy with money. Like you can't buy that there's only one Mbappe and one Erling Haaland in football, maybe the two best scorers right now in football. You can have 300,000 or £300 million. You cannot create the next big scorer in world football. And if that guy turns out to be a Lionel Messi, for instance, and starts up in the Barcelona Academy, and Barcelona can give all their lives to keep him, then Man City never get him. For instance, we knew that when Messi was coming up, you know, what, early 2000s, clubs like Chelsea wanted him, a lot of clubs wanted him, but then they just couldn't get him because it just came down to this guy did not come through the Chelsea ranks, he came through the Barcelona ranks. And there's so many talented players like that we see that, you know, you, and sometimes you even get the money to buy them, sometimes you buy those players and then they don't perform in your club because there's so many other factors in football. There's teammates, there's referees, there's injuries, there's all of that. I think when we say money in football, we just say, oh yeah, money. But I do think that a lot of people say this to downplay what, and yeah, I don't really like, it's not like I like Man City, you know. But I think it's also said to downplay some of the successes that have been achieved through many other factors.
Right.
Because yeah, we just put it down to money. Oh, it's the money. But I don't think it's just the money. I think, yeah, money does play a factor, but there's so many other things that money just can't do for you. It can raise your floor, but it can't really raise your ceiling. Like, the game changers in world football, they're just very few people. Money literally can't buy that for you. So that's my opinion on that, yeah.
I hear... Okay, wait. You're coming. I hear what you're saying, Digi. Let me say this right. In 2000, United won the title in England. Bayern won it in Germany. Lazio, a very very rich Lazio, who were backed by, they did go bankrupt later. Lazio won it in Italy. France was Monaco. And then in Spain, Deportivo La Coruña won it. Now you go down. By the time we got to 2005, when Chelsea 2005 and 2006, when Chelsea won, Bayern, both years Bayern were also the champions in Germany. Then later Stuttgart won in Germany. Bayern also won in 08. Wolfsburg won. There was a time when Valencia won two titles in three seasons in Spain. And that was the last time when Valencia won in 2004. That was the last time the title was won by any club outside of the big three. Until this season, which is part of what we discussed, the Genai. Until this season, Bayern Munich had won 11 straight titles. This is, did you start back? This is for, okay, I need you to to come in here. When we are talking about how simple the sport is, when we're talking about how this is the sport that gives us genuine competition. When you have Bayern winning 11 titles, at the time Juve won 9 titles, you and then Man City, if they win this one, they would have won 6 in the last 7. Have we not lost something?
This is exactly my point, right? It used to be we started the season and we didn't know who was going to win it. We still don't know who is going to win it most of the time. We know 3 or 4 teams are going to be in it in most league titles. Spain is a special case, right? But in most leagues, if you go to the German league, if you go to the French league, if you go to the Italian league, you would typically know there's 4 or 5 teams in it, and it depends on how they show up. Now, when you come to modern day football is every league that you look at, right? The teams that are in it are all backed by super finance. Look at every league. Any team that does not have its money together typically is not in the running. This season in Spain is an anomaly. But even Girona is not an anomaly, because Girona has backing from the City Group.
Yes.
So people say Girona is a fairy tale story. It is not a fairy tale story. This is City saying, we scoured the planet for the best players. They can't fit into all our team. We're going to farm them out into our team. And they transform that concentration of talent in such a small team, transforms Girona from an also-ran to a title contender in less than 6 months. And people tell me money doesn't have an impact. The thing that people forget is that for PSG to become the force that they had to raid their competitors.
Which is what Bayern also used to do.
Yes. So Bayern raided their competitors. City raid their competitors. Barcelona, Real Madrid raid their competitors. Chelsea raided its competitors across Europe. It's impossible to do this without understanding that these super teams distort the balance of football. What they do is they buy the best 2 or 3 people in every position, which means in their team, across the face of their team, there's a concentration of talent that is unnatural.
Yes.
So you would have, at any given point in time, they buy the best fullback, the best left back from France, the best one from Spain, the best central defenders typically taking it off a middle table team. Now, John Stones in Everton would have made Everton a little bit more solid throughout the last decade. No, but he goes to City and joins a super team. And now he's winning trebles, right? So the things that would have allowed the smaller teams to compete, like you've taken Grealish out of Villa.
I was coming to that. Man City used to.
He's now sitting on the
and Mahrez.
Yeah,
Grealish and Mahrez.
You have two of the best wingers, right? sitting playing alongside two of the best wingers. So at every point in time, Pep Guardiola has a team where he has very little drop-off, regardless of who he picks. In a tournament that has a marathon, it's no surprise he's winning 6 out of 7. Nobody else can keep up.
But another side to that argument is in Manchester United, for instance. We've seen Chelsea as well in the last 3 years. They have money. I don't think it just comes down to money. I think that we've seen clubs that have a lot of money. They sign players who are seemingly good, the best. They pay them all the wages. They do all that. But then, how do you coach these players? How do you translate that supposed quality into victories on the pitch? I think that's something that we also have to put into consideration.
And I'm agreeing. And the reason why, and just to give a quick rebuttal, the reason why nobody is accusing City of only being about the money is because we recognize that there's something other than the money at work. But it, no matter how good a coach Guardiola was, without the money, this feat is impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I think Guardiola is one example. But another example is PSG, for instance. PSG started this season with Mbappe. And then they signed Colomwani for, what, 80 million. And then signed the Portuguese guy for so much money as well. You know, Ramos. And they barely played these guys. Now, one way to look at it is that, I think for me, this is a question I always ask. These guys that have been signed for this amount, are they really worth this amount? I think a lot of super clubs are throwing money away. So yes, in that sense, I agree with you. They're spoiling football. They are spending too much money. It's making them powerful. But I also think it's because the market is very inflated. I don't think the market should be as inflated as it is. In another, you know, maybe some 20 years back or some 25 years back, Jack Grealish doesn't go for less than £15 million.
Yes, but only another rich club would have been able to afford that 15 million. I'm not even talking about the numbers. I need you to come here. This is not about the numbers. And I also need to make something clear to whoever, to our listeners and even to all of us here in the pod. This is not about talking down on Pep Guardiola's huge achievement. It's not to say that he's not any good. He's a football obsessive manager and he's a control freak. I had a podcast here with two UEFA licensed coaches a few weeks ago, and the irony of it was that one of them coaches who used to be a professional footballer, he said that he loves the way Guardiola coaches, but as a player, he would not have loved to play for Guardiola because he believes that he does not allow the kind of intuitive play that some players would like. But that's a different conversation entirely. So, Deji's point is that it's not all about money. Meanwhile, Oke is making a solid point that when you look at the footballers at clubs like City, PSG are able to assemble. If you remember, it reminds me of when we were in university, when Berlusconi was assembling all those players for Milan.
Yeah, the Milan.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, you're Milan. I forgot, Seth, you're a Milan fan. All those players at that time. So, when Chelsea did when Jose and Abramovich were in their pomp, when you depopulate your opponents to populate yours, does it not make your job slightly easier?
It does. Yeah, it does. I mean, like both have said, there's no gainsaying to it and there's nothing to add, really. I just elaborate. It strengthens you. It weakens the opponent. I mean, Bayern are a case in point, just like you mentioned, 11 times in the row, blah, 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 and every season they pick up the best guys. But once in a while, there comes a shooting star in different leagues or all over the place that somehow bucks the trend. But when the trend is bucked, it's not sustainable.
It's not.
I've noticed. Look at Klopp. You mentioned Klopp, for example. This is if City win this title, that'll be their sixth title in 7 years. How come with all the money of Chelsea, the money of Man U and all that, nobody has been able to break that cycle? Even Arsenal, because they all spend, like Oke said, everybody spends and we spend heavily, just that there are different ways of doing it. So when teams like City and PSG can actually spend without any inhibition, or seemingly without any inhibition, and deep pockets that have no limits, that's where I think the problem lies. And that's where a lot of distortion happens. And also, we're all businessmen. Some of us here have been in financial world for a long time. Once that kind of money hits that industry, or hit the industry from from years back. You know the kind of discussions that have been happening, layering up into different places. And now, just like I think it was you that mentioned it, it's a big trend now that all these big clubs are owning smaller clubs all over the world. Because the cost of getting that next Messi, that next Pele, and the cost is increasing. And the best thing is to own a subsidiary or a smaller club that will feed you. So money is being dispersed or being used in different ways to still keep creating or maintaining the positioning of these super clubs. And I don't think anything will stop it.
This is worrying for me.
Years ago, or when we were great. Sorry?
This is worrying. It's not a trend.
Sorry?
It's a worrying trend, if you ask me. I'm not happy about that. Especially this.
I agree. Mm. But I don't think anything will stop it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just like you pointed out, when we were younger, we only had a sprinkling of these kind of clubs or this kind of ownerships. We were mentioning in Milan. We were mentioning Inter was like that before Milan came up. Yeah. Inter of the 60s and 70s was owned by the biggest.
Yeah,
exactly. So it's always like that.
Mm. Yeah.
Exactly. Dynamo Moscow was owned by the state.
Yes.
So they pumped all the money of the state into the club and took all the best players from all over Russia or US and became Dynamo. So that trend will never stop. What I'm even more worried about is the fact that the governing bodies like UEFA and FIFA and co, they can only react. And unfortunately, I can't even gauge the integrity in their reactions, because their counter reactions, the decisions they take, are geared towards making money or competing to make money with the clubs or with the owners, rather than trying to level the playing the playing field. Look at, of course, the obvious example. Look at the City. 3 years or 2 years ago, they were found guilty by UEFA, but for some technical reason, they were not punished. Mm. They have 115 charges leveled against them in the PL. Smaller clubs are getting punished, but why is the big mega club that is country owned not getting punished?
I have to explain that City and Premier League one here. City.
I understand it too.
No, City
but
said.
It is not, it's no, not justifiable.
No, 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 wait, Esley, wait. City said, when they were charged, City said that pleaded not guilty. So, in situations like that, because they pleaded not guilty, the burden of proof is with the Premier League.
The prosecutor.
Yeah, the burden of proof is with the Premier League. Both Everton and Nottingham Forest pleaded guilty, which I'm sure with benefit of hindsight now, they hate that they pleaded guilty. So that's why.
Like Bobrisky
and Kubana. Exactly.
Pretty much, yeah.
So this is what happened. City have said they're not guilty. So it's up to the Premier League to do their job and come up and say, yes, this is
but
it.
But do you not?
Go on, Digi.
But do you not feel that that is also a distortion?
Oh, yes, it is.
Because City have the resources to fight legally.
Exactly. Yes. Thank you. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Those margins are too, they are too disparaging.
You see, Digi.
Go ahead.
Did you see? Yeah. You see, I have one, a very strong case again, is the way Newcastle have come up with Eddie Howe. And the way Newcastle have gone up in picking up the brightest young English British talent, Harvey Barnes, Gordon, that they've picked up. They went to Lyon and got, was it Lyon that they got Bruno Guimaraes from? These are the kind of players that they could only have gotten with because of the backing that they have now.
Is that the fact though, or are we just attributing that to the money that they have? Because there are some other clubs in the Premier League who are not owned by, you know, anyone from Saudi.
Yeah. Is that a strategy? Yeah, you're right.
But they would spend what? How much was Gordon? Maybe 50 million pounds.
Yeah.
There are a lot of clubs in the Premier League who are spending 50 million pounds and they're not owned by any rich owners. There are clubs that, you know, would have... I mean, a good example, look at Tonali. It was their big signing. It was the one... I think you can say Tonali was their statement to say that we're a big club. when you buy a player from AC Milan, yes, you know, you can pay all the wages, all that stuff.
Yes.
But he's barely featured for them this season.
Mm.
They have succeeded on the back of Harvey Barnes, who was bought from Leicester City. Everybody buys players from relegated clubs. It's not like, it's not because Newcastle have money.
The point I'm trying to make is that you make that point. But the thing though is now,
yeah,
nobody is going to cherry pick Newcastle's players.
Which is a fair point. So again, I think it was okay that I mentioned it earlier. You know, about the Manchester City situation as well.
Mm.
When it comes to money,
yeah,
it helps you with, you know, it helps you with get a better facility. It helps you pay better wages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't deny that. It helps you keep your players better. You know, you have good, better conditions. I think money can help you do that.
Yes.
So, certainly, like, yes, I said, I'm not denying the influence of money, but I'm saying that overall, we have to be able to draw a line between how much influence does money really have in helping teams grow to be super teams. I mean, Real Madrid is a good instance. Real Madrid had a phase, was it in the 60s, when they were basically bankrupt, had no money, had to depend on academy players, you know, and then going into the 80s, when it was basically the Butragueños and the likes.
Mm.
And if you look at Real Madrid of today, you say, oh, rich club, super wealthy, spoiling the market, all of that. But they've done this while being a fan-owned club. Like, no one has come into pumping money into Real Madrid. They have become, they have done this while being a fan-owned club. They've done this while growing with academy players.
No, that's a fan-owned club. Are you, okay.
Are you being serious?
But Real Madrid are a fan-owned club.
Are you being serious? No,
they're like government.
Deji, you're not entirely being... you're not covering the picture.
No, you're not.
The fact is that nobody has taken money and used... Like, I mean, Abramovich lost money when he left Chelsea. He's taking his money. He's put it into Chelsea. He's lost money. Nobody has given Real Madrid that. Maybe they've got some loans.
But this is different.
They've got some good loans. But, you know...
The difference, the thing that Real Madrid has is to sit on the Madrid board, you have to put a certain amount of money on the table. Right? Last time I checked, that amount of money was somewhere around 80 million euros.
Yeah.
That is essentially saying that the board of 13 directors of Real Madrid have a personal bond of 1 million euros,
yeah,
which basically says they are bankrolling the club, allowing the club to take loans almost up to 1 billion euros, yeah, and they are personally guaranteeing that that money will be repaid. So if Real Madrid were to default on any of those loans, they are basically going to take it from Perez's account or for somebody's account. It doesn't mean
that's a smart way to use money.
Yes, but Valencia can't do that, for instance.
Yes.
Yeah.
They can come up with that plan as well.
Like, it's personal, no?
Yes, sir.
But it's even a thin line between what's legal and what's not. Because if you remember, with the Spanish football authorities, they've been going back and forth in Real Madrid about source of funding and all that. And somehow, maybe politically or whatever it is that they do, that keeps getting squashed.
You can't touch Real.
Because...
you can't touch Real.
It's not illegal, right?
Yes. Mm.
Because it's not illegal. A lot of it is legacy funding.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, one of the advantages that Real Madrid, and the reason why people still keep investing in Real Madrid and Barcelona and even Atletico Bilbao, is because their legacy funding is so strong,
yeah,
and their roots in the cities where they are so deep.
Very deep. Right? Yeah.
So, Real Madrid, for instance, right? I think the chairman of the board of Banco Santander sits on the board of Madrid.
Absolutely.
And the chairman of the Madrid Council?
The chairman of the Madrid Council and a former state judge. And so you're not going to get
any, in every way.
you're not going to get any ruling against Madrid.
Yeah.
But to be fair,
that's something that's falling on their lap. Like, it's not because some guy has come with money.
No, but look at
the way they did it. You know, it was on those Franco days that all this has been coming up. I mean, yeah, okay. Because it's easy for us. You know, I wrote something that when Mika gave the intro, I said, history when we look at history from various or different years or eras, we forget the source. We forget what started what we are looking at presently. One, and then two, whoever is starting can start to draw a line at a certain era, and everything that was before that era doesn't really matter, and obscures what the whole, because what the whole source or the truth will be. Because now it's easy for us to say this is what Madrid is doing, but you are, but we all know that for decades Madrid's Madrid's strength came from the fact that the Franco era made sure that they were established, they became a representation of Spain, and if you like it or not, dubious funds were used into it that positioned them
in the world at the time.
Exactly. So, but now it's easy for to say, okay, this is how nice and clean they look now in their
world. Yes, but this club also lost all of that at some point.
Exactly.
I don't think they've always had that. Like, there was a time when they lost all of that, when the club was basically bankrupt, when the club basically ran on academy players. It's like Barcelona right now. Barcelona are going through maybe one of their worst phases financially. And, you know, they're owing up to €1 billion or something like that. If Barcelona get out of this phase through maybe some smart thinking or, you know, some genius idea, we have to credit that. I don't think that we can always. So it's you know, we've given so many examples before. Spurs are a good example. Spurs are, you know, yeah, they have money, all of that, but they have to do certain things from a financial standpoint that other clubs don't have to do because they have more money. And if Spurs in 20 years become the richest club in the world, we have to give credit to people like Daniel Levy. We have to give credit to the people who have helped them grow.
Because phases start
and end.
You're correct. I am not even about clubs that have made it organically. No. That's that. They've deserved. They will deserve whatever success they get from this organic growth. What I have found. I don't know, I'm trying to find the right word to use to describe it, is this lack of competition. Okay, yes, this was the thing. I have always maintained that for a football club to go through a season unbeaten, or for a football club to get up to 9,200 points in a season, personally, I see it as a league not being strong enough. I see it as, rather than saying, oh, there's this club that is extra special. No, I think that the competition is not strong enough. That is why you will be able to get to that this number of points or to win the title without losing a game. If I played in a league, I played in a club and a team was to win the league without losing a game, I'll be really affronted by it. Why? What were we doing that they're not able to lose one game? I think it's an indictment on the league. So my take is that there is too much, there's very little competition these days because of the gap. Yes, that's the word, because of the financial gap. The financial gap is not closing anytime. It is only stretching and stretching, and is ruining competition
I have a slightly different take.
Please.
I have a slightly different take.
Go ahead.
Right. So my take on teams that perform exceptionally in particular season, right? I think what you need to look at is the fact that it happens so infrequently, right? That despite all the, whether you call it financial doping or super club phenomenon or investment, we can still count on one hand the amount of people who have gone on 40 plus unbeaten runs.
Yep.
We can count them on one hand.
Yep.
We can count on one hand the amount of people who have gone an entire season unbeaten. We can still count the amount of teams that have done trebles on one hand. So for me, the problem with super clubs is not that they guarantee success.
at the highest level. Because I agree with the journal, it takes a bit more than just the money. However, my pet peeve with them is they guarantee the club itself a certain level of consistency that is independent of what is happening in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fair.
When you have so much talent available, there's only so much.
It can insulate you from a lot of things.
Yeah, it can insulate you from a lot of things. You have game changers all over the pitch. No matter how good the other manager is, if his team gets tired and you can bring five superstars off the bench, you're going to beat him.
Mm. Right? Exactly.
So you will end up winning more games than you lose regardless. So you will be in the top six of anything, no matter what happens.
Absolutely.
Now, for you to now go the extra mile and put together a treble season, you will need something special on top of it. But it means that your chance of relegation is next to zero, which never used to be the case. It used to be the case that you could win the league and be relegated two seasons later. Mm. For a super club, that's almost impossible.
Yeah.
I remember. Okay.
I remember Real Sociedad coming second one season, and two seasons later they were in La Liga B. I remember Xabi Alonso was in that Real Sociedad team that came second.
It was Xabi Alonso. It was Mikel Arteta. First of all, it was the Alonso brothers, right? It was Mikel Arteta was there. They had a couple of veterans. With a little bit more money, not even a lot of money, with a little bit of money, they could have built a dynasty.
Chelsea is a good example. Chelsea, they would be fighting relegation if they didn't have all the money that they have this season.
Mm.
Yeah. But at least they have enough money to stay mid-table, even when they're struggling. I just wanted to talk about, how it's a thin line as well. I think I really resonate with what Kev said. The money doesn't give you the success necessarily, but it helps you to avoid a certain level of disappointment or a certain level of failure. So Juventus are a good example of how somehow you have to credit the know-how of these people. When they got promoted, I think after the whole Kashipoli scandal, I think it was 2011 when they got into the And then 2 years later, I think they won the league. And then 3 years later, they had the 100-point season with Antonio Conte. And it was basically Carlos Tevez. Like, Carlos Tevez literally just took them to that title. They got Tevez from Man City for about 12 million euros. And he was basically kicked out of Man City. Like, he was surplus to requirements after all the stuff with Mancini. They kicked him out. But then, so, that's just an example of how you can still get good deals. There are so many good deals in the market. Good deals can make you do great things. Yes, maybe not every club could have paid Tevez's salary. But then, when you look at it in the grand scheme of things, there's so many other clubs that could have got Tevez for 12 million euros. And then Juventus did it. And it took them to over 100 points.
And they won eight after that.
Exactly. And it was mainly on the back of that, really. Like, if they didn't have the first two seasons, maybe they wouldn't have done it. But it was on the back of that. And then, another point to always consider when we talk about these clubs, which is where I disagree with Emeka, we should also look at the competition. I think sometimes the competition is just not good enough.
That's what I'm saying.
This season in Premier League is a good example. Arsenal are second on the table because they lost points against Fulham and which of those small clubs. I can count at least 2-3 teams. Liverpool are a good example too. Liverpool drew against Luton Town and they lost to, was it Bournemouth or who did they lose to? And if you give them the 5 points from those games, Liverpool are on top of the league. I think teams have to look inwards. Yes, Arteta was talking stuff about how in another league, blah, 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 blah. Look inwards. You have lost against smaller teams. And when people say, there's money, there's money. You have money as well. Like, Arsenal have money. Arsenal may not be Man City, but Arsenal have money. Arsenal are not Fulham. Like, if you cannot also interpret the money that you have, a club like Manchester United cannot complain about another club having money.
Never.
Exactly. Even Atletico Madrid cannot complain about Real Madrid having money.
Absolutely.
That's it. So that also has to be put into context. I don't think that I think there's a lot of talk about the competition. How is the competition in the league? But teams have to play to their potential. If you can put up a Bayer Leverkusen level of competition every season, which is very difficult, you know, takes us back to what money can do for you. Yes, it can help you pay salaries. It can help you keep your players. I agree with that. But if you can put up that sort of season, this season Bayer Leverkusen have had, you're going to win every league, every season, against every team.
But you can't. That's the thing.
Well, of course. Yeah. Of course. Not every team. Of course you can.
And not every team can do that. That's the problem.
That's the thing. To round up, I still have to insist that I feel this I don't know if it's lost, I would call it, that a league season does not start, and I'm thinking, in fact, this is the first time where in fact Arsenal have lost 5 league games, Liverpool have lost 3, City have lost 3. When I started following football really in European leagues, it was standard to lose 6 games. That even Sir Alex used to say that you used to give yourself the maximum you will lose in a season was to lose between 5 and 6 games. That's the only, if you lose more than that, your chance of winning the title have reduced. For me, it gave me that sense of competition that you can't. City are not traveling to Luton, and the 3 points is a given. Arsenal are not traveling to Newcastle, and the 3 points is a given. Liverpool are not traveling to Bournemouth, and the 3 points are a given. When I used to love to watch La Liga, it was because you know that anybody visiting the Madrigal, anybody who is visiting, Valencia's Sevilla, you're visiting Sevilla Stadium, you're going to Betis, you know it's going to be fight to finish. You can't be guaranteed that you're going to leave there with the 3 points. This is the competition that makes football seem very fair. But these days it doesn't look like that. There are some matches I'll just see the fixtures and I'll go, nah, I know how it is going to end. That for me is what I believe that the finances have distorted the leagues.
Can I make that even more stark for you?
Yeah.
Right. Barcelona has lost 5 games this season in the league, and it's a crisis.
See, but
they are second in the league. They've lost 5 games all season, and it's a crisis. Real Madrid have lost 2 games in all competition all season, and it's not considered a great vintage season.
Exactly, because of the Champions League.
Because we've only lost 2 games all season. We lost 1 game to Atletico in the league and 1 game to Atletico in the cup, and it's just that. Remember, that only lost to Atletico twice this season. It's not considered a vintage season because you haven't won. The league is not guaranteed, but you've lost only 1 game in the league, 1 game in the cup. You've not lost to the Champions League all season. I mean, that might change today, but who knows?
What is the sports going to? Why have we? Why is there that? Thank you. Why is there that need that we expect that we don't expect? We expect some clubs not to lose games. Why is that?
I think football and sport. I think we've also, we who are talking here, if you put us with one or two Gen Zs or the newer, younger generation,
yes,
they wonder what you're talking about. We are typically quick to compare football now with football when we when it meant much more to us. Mm. And we have, and we are very nostalgic about what football should be. But don't forget that the football that we still compare the present day with was football that evolved even from 30, 40 years before we were born.
Mm.
So I think it's important also that we look at football or sports with a different eye because this is becoming a norm.
Yeah,
money is finding its way.
Where is competition?
But don't forget, there are more millionaires or more billionaires in this world. There are more people who are looking for different ways to express or to spend or to use their money to do different things in terms of leverage or power or whatever.
Mm.
So I think there'll be more money coming to sport in different ways. And there'll be more expressions. I'm look at Nigeria present day. Look at the number of teams that have young guys who own football clubs in the NPFL, like Sporting Lagos, like in the NNL, and Inter Lagos. And there are quite a number of them coming up. Mm. And that's just Nigeria. So I just think we need to also look with different eyes at how things are developing and maybe start to, in quote, forget about the good old days.
No.
And understand that
No, that's not my point.
We have a new scenario.
That's not my point. So what I'm saying is, do we not run the risk of what we consider the ethos of the sport being that it is no longer competitive? It's like
that's what I'm saying.
Before
it's
the
changing.
Champions League starts, we already know.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes,
yeah. It's changing. That's my point. So. I'm looking at what we typically say on social media.
Mm.
When you and I most of us here are talking on our WhatsApp group.
Yes.
We keep talking about referring to the fact that stats are driving football or sports. If nobody looks at how the game is played, really, nobody says that, oh, that guy is a good number 10. The number 10 is disappearing. Or if he doesn't score 20 assists and 20 goals, he's not a player because of his stats.
Mm.
So I think those things are changed. We are witnessing a rapid, unfortunately rapid change from the football we were used to and the football we see now because those finances have come in. There is nothing anybody can do. And it will get worse because with all this free... I don't know what the time is called financially. With free trade or free whatever, I mean, look at all the rulings coming out from FIFA, coming against FIFA. Now, very soon now, the Premier League will be able to play big matches in America or anywhere in the world because of free trade and all that. So things are changing and I think the money will always come in and the dynamics of or the way money comes in will change, but the fact that money will come in now, more money will come in and smaller clubs become big.
And I think therein lies the problem.
Yeah.
The problem for me is You've gone from a sport that was primarily a labor of love. I mean, most footballers in the 70s and 80s will tell you they didn't do it to get rich, right?
No, you're right.
So you've gone from a sport where it's a labor of love to a sport that is primarily driven by the fund. People have put so much money invested in stadiums and buying the clubs and TV rights that failure now becomes a problem because it's now look at the deal that Barcelona and Real Madrid signed with the Saudi authority for the Spanish Super Cup. There is a clause in there that the FA loses money if Real Madrid or Barcelona doesn't come in the second.
What?
So they're saying if you're going to have a Super Cup, four teams, two of those teams must be Barcelona and Real Madrid, or we will not pay you the same amount of money.
Exactly.
So there was this scandal in La Liga where when Barcelona was third, it was like a crisis for the FA.
Yeah,
we felt like the referees were being pressured to help them.
Because legality already covers it. Money.
Do you see the problem there? That's problematic.
Well, that's the FA's fault.
I think Chola has made a good point about how the game is evolving. It's not the same game anymore.
Is it evolving
in the past? Like,
DJ?
Well, it's just life. I don't think it's
exactly
a good reference is the NBA. I think the NBA, for instance, they figured that the game was starting to become entertainment. And so today, for instance, in the NBA, you know, you'd hear things like big market, small market. You'd hear things like, oh, the referees are favoring this team. It's not as fair as it used to. It's the reality. But then they still have a sense of competition. Football is coming to that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Okay. Listen, yeah. Gentlemen, it's been fun. And I thank you all for making our time. DJ, thank you for your post on X that led to this discussion. But I think I would do more. I would try and get a lot more people, so we might have a part two, part three, even part four of this as the days turn into weeks and weeks into months. Listen, DJ, thank you, Shola. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, okay.
My pleasure.
Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Love you guys. All right, then.
Well,
and that's it. Thank you so very much for being a part of this episode of your Sports Memo podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please do share amongst your, wherever you listen, you get your podcast. Share with your listeners and share with your friends. And please feel free to write to us on podcast@acsports.com and I would respond. Until I come your way for the next episode, my name is Calvin Emeka Onwuka. Peace.